When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
If you think about screen time, and I remember when I first had my daughter, Gabby, the American Academy of Pediatrics had just come out with this rule that were like, okay, parents, no screen time for kids under two, and 1 hour a day for kids over two. I think I'm remembering that right. And I thought, because all the new parents I know were starting to already show their kids the iPhone and like little Sesame Street rhymes and sing-alongs and stuff like that. And I thought, well, maybe I'm feeling kind of guilty. Got to shut that off. Got to not do that. Fast forward to the beginning of the pandemic when all the rules got relaxed because kids turned to their devices even more than they already were. And now, how many months later, school's on your devices, your contact sometimes, your only contact with your friends are through being on your screens, and the screen usage is off the charts. And I know this is one of the topics that Dr. John Duffy will be talking about in his free panels coming up. He's got a free parent series, and we'll tell you more about that. But Dr. John, this has got to come up in your practice, the screen time issue. It's huge right now.
Anna, I cannot tell you, there is nothing that's coming up more frequently in any referral or any session with a family than how do I get my kids off these screens that they're on constantly. It is huge right now, and you described the kind of the way that this has gone over the course of the last year and a half or so beautifully, because yeah, a couple of years ago, we were saying, oh, nothing more than for younger kids, half an hour or an hour a day. For older kids, 2 hours on the long end. Otherwise, you're looking at more depression, anxiety, maybe attention issues, even suicidal ideation. So make sure you have so many options other than screens. And then all of a sudden, we have no options other than screens. And we're kind of forced into this situation where we've got to find some balance. And our kids are able to build very, very good cases that, well, I don't know how you're going to do that because I go to school on my screen and I talk to my friends on the screen and, you know, I play games on the screen. I unwind on the screen. Everything's going to happen on that screen. So I don't know what I'm supposed to do if I'm not on it all the time.
Right. So I don't even know how you set limits in this world, because honestly, my daughter, the only contact she's really had lately with friends, her really lifelong friends, she's been calling them at night, and she spends sometimes an hour on FaceTime with them, and they do things. Sometimes they dance. Sometimes they do fun stories. I don't know. You know, she's having a ball. I don't want to interrupt it, because there certainly aren't a ton of face-to-face things going on. So you just wonder, how do you handle that?
Yeah, so the important thing is to not – you and I have traded some messages about a New York Times article recently that
yes.
talked about how screen time is soared, right? And there's going to be this epic withdrawal on the back end of the pandemic. In the meantime, and I'm not sure – I think that might be a little hyperbolic, but in the meantime, what we're looking for is balance and reason when it comes to all this stuff, because sometimes, quite a bit of the time, our kids truly are using their screens to connect with their friends in as safe a way as they possibly can, and taking that away from them altogether is detrimental to their friendships, to their emotional well-being, and they are keenly aware that their friends are going to get together, whether they are on that call or on Snapchat at that time, or, you know, creating TikTok videos with them or playing that video game with them. So they know they're missing out if they're not participating. So we need to let our kids participate socially at least some of the time on top of all that time they're spending, you know, in school. So the thing that I lean on most is a little contrary to what my parent clients tend to be drawn to. And they tend to be drawn toward a lecture, right? You know, like Duffy says that you're going to get depressed if you're on the screen too much, and so you've got to get off that thing and put it down and, you know, just kind of like fighting the screen without providing any alternative. What I'm encouraging parents to do and families is to get the screens into the margins of your kids' lives as best you can by filling in the blanks, by creating other things for them to do. And I know we're in a pandemic. I know this is a very difficult thing to ask you to do, but there's an awful lot. There are things that need to be done around the house. There are games that can be played. There are shows that you can watch together as opposed to your kids just scrambling up into their rooms on their own. There's exercise to be had, right? You know, there are, if you're creative, there are a number of things that you can do, either your child alone or as a family, so that you are not forever trying to play tug of war with the screen with your child, because we all know that in the end we're going to lose that, or we're going to get exhausted and the emotional bank account with our child is going to drop into the red and they're not going to listen to us on anything else.
Right. Or worse, I think there are some friends of mine who have teenagers in particular who worry that the kid becomes so engaged in this online world, particularly video games and stuff like that, that there's this constant simulation that they will not do so well in the offline world, in the real world, instead of the virtual world. There seems to be this sort of disconnect where they're bored and sort of, I don't know, just kind of complacent, like just not full of energy until they get on their screens and then they light up, right?
No, you're absolutely right. And screens are a way for, you know, kids to kind of avoid an awful lot. They can light up on the screen, but they're really disengaged from big pieces of the real world. And we do not want our kids to get too acclimated to the screen as a self-regulation device. In other words, you know, I'm starting to feel a little anxious. I'm going to turn to my screen instead of like, I can handle that. I can regulate my emotions on my own, you know. And so what I want to see more in families, and is happening less and less as the pandemic goes on, and I get it, the pandemic is exhausting, but the more families are talking, and I'm just using my client families as my sample size, the more they're talking with each other, and I mean talking about the inauguration. How do you feel about it? Do you think this went well? Talking about what happened at the Capitol a couple of weeks ago. Talking about the music that was played last night. Was this the right choice? Who would you have had play instead? You know, anything that engages them, draw that out of them and get them talking and realizing that, oh, yeah, I have a couple other tools besides just the screen at my disposal that I can use in order to ease my anxiety, you know, because if we don't do that, then I fear the author of this piece is going to be right, and there is going to be this massive withdrawal on the back end of the pandemic, and kids already are telling me, I'm not sure I'm very good at relating to people anymore, like especially one-on-one, face-to-face. I think I'm losing that skill, and that is a scary thing.
It is a scary thing. That article, too, people want to go to it. It's New York Times. They quote a lot of research, and they say that apps like Fortnite, TikTok, Snapchat, Pokemon Go, Roblox, the kinds of things that kids were already using before the pandemic, were in some cases up in terms of usage 82% year to year, which just shows how much they're going to these things, how much time they're spending on them. And I think that's a little concerning. I have, again, my friend, she says her son will not get off of Pokemon Go. It's the only time, she can't possibly take it away from him. It seems like the only thing that he cares about. He does his schoolwork, and that's about it. And then he goes to that, and that's his day. And he just loves it. It's terrible.
Yeah. And that I so feel for her. That could be so frustrating and kind of scary from a parental point of view, because you fear this kind of screen addiction that we hear about, and frankly can be a very real thing, especially for kids who are playing games. Like they get upset when they don't do well, when they don't level up, or when they don't catch the Pokemon on the street, and this really, really bothers them. And again, the more that we can spread out some of the activity of these kids, and it doesn't have to be for hours a day, because I know parenting right now is a mighty, mighty task. But if you can get your child away from the screen for a half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour, and the thing I'm most drawn to, Anna, if I'm being honest, is movement. So, like, if you mandate, like, you're going to hit the Peloton bike, or you're going to jog in the streets, or we're going to play tag in the yard, or you're going to shovel the snow, whatever it is, I don't care what it is. As long as your child is moving somehow, because what I see in concert with this screen use and this huge uptick in it is a massive decrease in movement. Kids are sedentary and they are sitting still. And if we can flip that script even a little, then I think on the back end of the pandemic, we can start to tweak that more and more and more in the way of activity. And honestly, for the emotional and physical well-being of kids, nothing is more important than movement. And kids are not drawn to movement right now. So what I'm pressing parents to do is really, really encourage your kids to move every single day. And if that's the only parent card you play, that's an hour that your child is not on a screen and that they're, you know, engaged in some sanctuary other than that in their mind. And they might not be perfect, but it's a much better answer than just being on the screen all day long.
My kid's gym teacher makes them roll a dice, and then whatever number they hit, they have to do that exercise that corresponds. So it's like their gym homework every night. Problem is, she has us do it with her. It is exhausting. I mean, squat thrusts, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I kind of try to cheat, and then she calls me out. She's like, you're not doing it, and this is how it goes. But you're right. She actually seems to enjoy doing it, and it sort of is one of those things maybe that you're turning to these devices and these video games that kind of lets out your anxiety a little bit or kind of some of your energy, and this is another way to do it, which is why you're pointing it out. I want to continue this conversation the other side. Dr. John, you got a few more minutes for us here? Because some more things to get to. And I also want to promote the cool thing you're doing, the free parent programs you've got going on. So more with Dr. John Duffy coming up here on WGN. It's 2:45 this Thursday afternoon. Talking about screen usage, devices, and screen time for kids, and how much it's increased during the pandemic from areas time when we used to call alarming before, is there's a different definition for that now. They say screen time May to May doubled, and since then it's been increasing ever since. The kids are taking to their devices. There's no doubt that they've got to do school on their devices. This is how they see friends. There's so many things that are required to do now that you got to go to a computer screen for. And I get it. And we were dwelling on a lot of the negatives because I think there are a lot of concerns out there right now because of that screen time, Dr. Duffy. A few positives I have seen, a few positives, and heard from other parents is that kids' tech fluency at even like a young age is huge right now. It's like my daughter can change my Zoom background. She's doing these like mini stop motion movies with like a green screen and figuring stuff like that out. They're spending so much time with technology. They have surpassed like what most 40-year-olds know in some ways. You know, it's just that, I guess, is a positive. It's something there, maybe.
I am so glad you touched on that, because that is absolutely a positive. Kids are learning this dexterity of navigating all, whether it's applications or, you know, different types of software, even the video games. You know, there are certain skills that they are building all the time as they work their way through their days. And we do not want to diminish those things, because as a lot of the, you know, middle school, high school, even college age kids I work with tell me, a lot of the things I'm learning now, I'm going to be using the rest of my life. You know, if I'm marketing any business, I'm going to need to know something about Instagram and about some of the analytics involved in that. And some of the video editing that these kids are able to do. You're right. People in a different generation have no idea how to do that. So these kids are amassing skills that many of them will make careers out of, or at least part of their careers out of. So we don't want to forbid this altogether or ignore the positive elements of it. There's also this element of socialization. More and more people are going to be connecting through screens one way or another, right? This is going to, people are going to, in all likelihood, and I read a great article about this yesterday, in all likelihood, people are not going to be heading downtown to go to work 5 days a week a year from now. That there will be some dramatic changes in the way we think and the way we work and the way we operate within our lives. And so a lot more work life is going to be taking place on a screen. And so a lot of kids point out, I am preparing myself for what the work future looks like, even if it looks like I'm just kind of squandering time here. I'm actually learning some skills that I will be able to use in the future, and some language that I'm going to need to use in the future. And some of this, of course, is a little bit of manipulation, like this affords me more screen time, but they're also right. You know, this actually is true.
Yeah, and the other thing I'd add to that is just they're being asked to organize their entire day now in a lot of cases. They're in another room of the house, or they're somewhere where they are basically in charge of their assignments, checking in with different teachers, checking in with all the things they need to do. And at even a young age, they have to figure that stuff out, whereas normally you go from class to class and you're kind of directed. They are so much more self-directed now, I feel.
I see kids, you know, I'll be talking to them on a Zoom call, and we'll be talking about, like, how they're struggling with an assignment or something. This happened this week, and this girl decided, you know, I should probably just email my teacher about that. Should I do it right now? And so they're getting very accustomed to interfacing with adults in a really casual way. And I remember thinking as she was doing this, right there on the call, that, you know, a generation ago, I wouldn't have considered reaching out, even if I had a method to, reaching out to a teacher of mine to ask a question. And now kids are much more comfortable doing that. And I think that's another upside to all of this.
And accessing information, which can be bad too, Dr. Duffy. You've come on many times before to say kids are accessing stuff they probably shouldn't be when they're online. And that's easy to find too if you've got hours and hours to just be on the devices, right?
Yes, that's no small thing, and it's the space in which I think it's important to pay attention to where in the house your child is when he or she is on a device, because your worst nightmares, you know, whether it's pornography or access to drugs or, you know, the darkest and most violent of material is all available in the palm of their hand. So if they're in a more common area of the house, they're far more likely to look at that. But also, part of parenting has become talking to your kids, even fairly young kids, about all of these things because they have access to it, and undoubtedly they have exercised that access just out of curiosity. You know, they've stumbled upon things that we would never want our kids to see, but most of our kids have had access to a lot that we would prefer they don't see for years.
Yeah, I'll second that. Hey, I want to ask you what you're seeing in your practice, because just anecdotally from what I'm hearing from friends and family members, just in my networks and that kind of thing, I honestly know more kids who are on anxiety drugs. I know more kids who are suffering from anxiety, depression right now. It is such a thing at such a high level. And I also know that parents say they can't even get a therapy appointment if you have insurance, if you can afford it, that kind of thing is happening. And I just wonder, you know, in general, it just makes me so sad for our kids right now that it's very difficult to deal with this time, and there's so many things coming at them as well.
Well, you and I have talked about this a little bit before, that, you know, we forget as the months go by that we are all idling on high. So we've all carrying this level of anxiety and fatigue around a pandemic, and the nature of our kids' lives, regardless of their ages, has changed dramatically, and it's been changed for a year, and a lot of kids are starting to feel a little bit hopeless, and so I am seeing a continued uptick in depression and anxiety, suicidal ideation, hopelessness, attention issues, academic issues. All the things that we worry about as parents continue to escalate as the pandemic goes on. And yes, the thing I usually encourage first and foremost is, as quickly as you can, get your children in front of a therapist. There's no downside to that. But to your point, the therapy appointments are not always readily available. What I am finding is that most therapists now, and this is a relatively new thing, we are now creating these networks. So if you reach out to a therapist, even if you're very sure that all the therapists in your area are busy, reach out to somebody who you know has experience working with children, and they will know somebody in their network who has some availability. And right now, geography is not something that's limiting us. In other words, you know, so much therapy is happening via Zoom that, you know, your therapist can be in California and you can still engage in a therapeutic interaction, and that can work out really, really well, to my surprise.
It's so true. That is a great point. You are part of a parent series. I want to get this in because it's free. There are events that are free for any parent to join. Tell us about them, Dr. Duffy. How do you do it?
Yeah, so this is a really cool thing. The Glenn Bard Parent Series it's a whole bunch of great parenting experts who are giving talks that are free. Their theme this year is Navigating Healthy Families. On Wednesday, January 27th, this coming Wednesday, I'm going to be giving a couple of talks. At noon, I'll be talking to school staff and professionals. And then at 7, I am talking to caregivers and parents. This is all live streamed by the College of DuPage, which is partnering with the Glenn Bard Parent Series. These are all free. They're all open to the public. There is no need for registration, and you can learn all about it at glennbardgps.org.
Glenn Bard, one more time.
glennbardgps.org.
glennbardgps.org.
Correct.
Some stuff.